and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Donald Trump's churlish and self-defeating criticism of the special counsel just appointed to investigate his ties to the Russians, and speak with John Dean, the former counsel to President Nixon and Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the best-selling author of Conservatives Without Conscience, who is now an analyst on CNN. He joins us to discuss the comparisons now being made to Watergate and Trumpgate, and Trump's propensity to make things worse for himself by attacking the press, the CIA, the FBI, James Comey, and now Robert Mueller. We will also look into the possibility that Trump will make a terrible choice by appointing the Republicans' favorite Democrat, former Senator Joe Lieberman, as the next director of the FBI, and how that will be received at the FBI and within the Department of Justice. Then we'll analyze what the number two Republican in the House, Kevin McCarthy, said in June of last year in a private meeting with Paul Ryan and top Republicans, where he remarked that, quote, "There's two people I think Putin pays, Rohrabacher and Trump." Then after some bemused laughter, he interjects, "Swear to God." After at first denying this to the Washington Post, once Paul Ryan was told there was a tape of the conversations, McCarthy's bombshell was brushed off as an attempt at humor. Gustavo Arellano, the editor of the OC Weekly, joins us to discuss his local congressman, the former red beta turned Putin lover, and an article by Matthew Croker in the OC Weekly, "Putin Paying Dana? Rohrabacher Claims He Man-Crushes on Vlad for Free." Then finally, we'll examine the revival of the failed war on drugs by Attorney General Jeff Sessions and look for underlying motives in wanting to fill the already full jails again with young black men and recriminalize marijuana while ignoring a national epidemic of opiate addiction from prescription drugs. Inga Frickland, a former Chicago prosecutor who wrote Our Disastrous Afghan Drug War at the request of the U.S. Army War College after spending 5 years in Afghanistan advising the U.S. Army and Marines, joins us to discuss her article at Vox, "I Prosecuted Drug Offenders in the 80s. It Was a Disaster. Why is Sessions Taking Us Back?" And joining us now is John Dean, who is the former counsel to Richard Nixon, and prior to that was chief minority counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives, the associate director of the Law Reform Commission, and associate deputy attorney general of the United States. He is a best-selling author of such books as Blind Ambition, Worse Than Watergate, and Conservatives Without Conscience. He's also a columnist at Justia.com and is now an analyst on CNN. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Dean.
Thank you, Ian.
And John, what do you make of the resistance on the part of Michael Flynn to respond to the subpoena from the Senate Judiciary Committee? I mean, I know there's a lot to cover. you can't keep up with Donald Trump, frankly. But let's start with that. What's the significance of that?
That would indicate his lawyers telling him that he's got criminal problems and he's, in essence, he hasn't invoked the Fifth Amendment yet, but he can always do that. It suggests to me, as I say, he's protecting himself from criminal liability by refusing to turn the material over to the Senate.
But prior to that, he floated the idea that he would make a deal and he had a story to tell. At least that's what his lawyer said.
Well, he was seeking immunity,
right,
and they obviously have not offered him that and probably will not. What they'll do now is they'll coordinate with the special counsel, Mueller, and as to any immunity or really anything they do in their investigation. They don't want to step on the federal prosecution.
Well, the assumption is that the memo by Comey, first of all, it's very likely that there are more memos of Comey squirreled away that may well be even more explosive than the one that was revealed by the New York Times the other day.
Very possible.
Very possible that it could be a slow drip here. But presumably, after Donald Trump made that approach to Comey on behalf of Flynn, and we don't know whether Trump did that because Flynn is his firewall, or whether indeed whatever Flynn did, he did it on the instructions of Trump. But nevertheless, when Comey came out of that meeting Trump had shooed out the attorney general and the vice president and wanted to talk to Comey alone, presumably Comey's boss, Attorney General Sessions, must have asked him what went on in that meeting, surely.
possible. And Comey is certainly enough of his own person that he might well say, I don't really feel at liberty to share that, and went back and drafted his memo.
Well, what does that say about Jeff Sessions? What do you hear from the Justice Department in terms of...
Well, I hear that he hasn't won the hearts and minds of the career people.
Well, that's not surprising. He does seem almost like a relic of the Confederacy. He seems to be totally out of touch. His war on drugs, which we'll be covering later in the program, seems like a complete throwback to the 1980s.
A waste of money at the federal level.
Right, right. So, obviously, you have been besieged with journalists asking you about connections between or analogies between Watergate and what's happening at the present. And I fear I'm following in their footsteps, only to the extent that I think that so far the analogies have been overblown. But
well, there are certainly echoes of the past that are being heard now. Everything from the style in which it's being done and some of the substance. Given the fact that the Watergate started with an effort to break in the Democratic headquarters to find information that might influence the election. The Russians accomplished that. They broke into the Democratic headquarters via computer, different technique and different technology today. So they start at the same place. What we don't know and did not know initially, if there is any collusion between Nixon and his reelection committee, and there's really, to my knowledge, never been any established as to Nixon giving any kind of orders that they should break into Watergate. There certainly were orders and instructions from the president to gather intelligence, just not a specific target. So we don't know yet what Trump was doing. We do know during the campaign he very openly at one point said, Russia, if you're listening, see if you can find 30,000 Hillary emails. So there are a lot of parallels. And they're coming down into this cover-up phase of it as well. Everything from the style with which he first fired the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, the style with which he fired the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, and then the director of the FBI. This isn't a man who's throwing any signals that he doesn't have anything to be worried about. To the contrary, every signal he's showing, and rather openly, is cover-up. So, as I say, they're not exactly parallel situations, but they certainly are similar situations.
And I just spoke on Sunday with your former colleague from the Nixon White House, Alexander Butterfield, and we talked about his reluctance to testify about the existence of the tape, and then not wanting to bring down a president. At the same time, he wasn't happy about the way Nixon treated people like you and others who had to go to jail, and he felt that Nixon was only out for himself in the final...
Well, I never made it to jail. I was in the witness protection program. They were more interested in keeping me alive.
Right, but others did, and he thought that Nixon didn't seem to have any compunctions about hanging other people out to dry. That maybe that's just the way presidents are. After all, it's an exalted...
Well, I don't have a sense that Donald Trump is out of the goodness of his heart worried about Michael Flynn.
Right.
I think he's worried about Donald Trump and what he either instructed Flynn or what Flynn knew from proximity as to Trump's actions. But clearly, Flynn is somehow central to all this, and with time I think we'll learn.
And again, I'm speaking with John Dean, who's the former counsel to President Richard Nixon, and prior to that was Chief Minority Counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives and Associate Deputy Attorney General of the United States, and he's the best-selling author of such books as Blind Ambition, Worse Than Watergate, and Conservatives Without Conscience. He's also a columnist at Justia.com and is now an analyst on CNN. So given that Donald Trump, just yesterday before the Coast Guard graduates, who one would assume the parents and the graduates themselves were expecting an uplifting address from the President of the United States about the careers that their sons and daughters are about to enter into. Instead, you had this whining, woe is me speech about how there's never been a president in the history of the United States more afflicted and more badly treated. And again, I was going to mention to you that the other day, Alex, just completely off the cuff without any prompting, thought that the next president of the United States would be Mike Pence, and it would happen sooner than later. What is your sense then of whether Trump could, because of his mindset, because he feels beleaguered and mistreated, could the 25th Amendment come into play before all of these other threads worming their way through the justice system vis-a-vis Russia? And
I don't see any potential for the 25th Amendment being invoked. I actually worked on that when I was at the House Judiciary Committee. It was really designed to take care of a situation where the president was truly incapacitated. It was done in the aftermath of the Kennedy assassination, and I thought, what would have happened had that man been comatose for the rest of his life but not died? And there would be no way to actually get the Vice President Johnson into the presidency. So that was a huge constitutional gap that was being addressed. While the language for fulfilling the duties of the office is there and might be interpreted broadly if you didn't know the legislative history behind the amendment, since we all do know why the amendment was drafted, it's just not likely to be used for a purpose like removing a president. And it takes all members. It takes a majority of two-thirds of the cabinet have to vote on it, and the vice president has to support it. Both houses of Congress requires a two-thirds vote to approve it. The president can contest it. It would be ugly. It would not work. So I think that's just pipe dreaming for those who feel strongly about Trump. Mm-hmm. More likely is what's happened now with this. We have a true and able prosecutor who knows his way around the federal system. He's a former assistant U.S. attorney. He's a former U.S. attorney. He's a former director of the FBI for a long term through both Republican and Democratic presidencies. He's highly respected. He is a no-nonsense, very capable lawyer. So you've got this is Donald Trump's worst nightmare if he's done something wrong. If he's done nothing wrong, this is the best of all cases for him, because if he's exonerated, it will be clearly because there is no there. So this cuts both ways. I mean, if as he claims, this is a witch hunt, Mueller will straighten it out very, very quickly, and it will go away. If it's not, he could well decide that he doesn't want to be president anymore and gently resign. There is precedent for that with Mr. Nixon. Or he could decide to let the process play out. And what, if passed, is prologue, and I think it is. Leon Jaworski, when he completed his investigation, made arrangements for the judge to authorize the grand jury information going to the House Judiciary Committee for impeachment proceedings. So there is that real potential, too. Also, the House and Senate are conducting their own investigations. I think they'll be around this criminal prosecution. But I think that this is probably going to be the extent of it. If there is no way to get this information to the American public, if it gets more convoluted and more stories come out, because I don't think that the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post are going to back off. They're going to keep reporting on this. Then they may need some kind of public commission to explain what exactly the Russians did, how they did it, how do we protect our system in the future, because nothing is more central to our government than our democracy and our election system working unencumbered by foreign influence.
But again, it seems that Trump is his own worst enemy. The White House had a boilerplate response to the appointment of former FBI Director Mueller as special counsel. And then Trump tweets a sort of petulant, angry tweet.
Yes, he undercut what was not a great statement, but certainly an acceptable statement. It took them 80 minutes to get out, so there must have been a lot of debate about it before it did come out. Right. And then he woke up early and decided he'd go to his Twitter.
Well, obviously, he's proactive and he fights back, and that was the sort of gist of his speech before the Coast Guard graduates yesterday. But he has a kind of firewall, obviously, with political people at the CIA, the DNI, the House and Senate Judiciary Committees, and Sessions at the DOJ, although now I'm beginning to understand why he got so angry that Sessions recused himself, because obviously Rod Rosenstein felt, I think he must have felt, that he had to restore his credibility. Do you think that's a factor with the few adults left in that White House, like General McMaster and General Mattis? How long can they be hung out to dry like McMaster was the other day, where he had to cover for Trump's gossiping?
Well, I'm sure McMaster is not very happy with the smudge on his reputation now, trying to deflect with disingenuous claims about what indeed had happened with the Russians in leaking or giving them intelligence without authorization of one of our intelligence gathering partners. So, you know, and people, there are a lot of jobs that are not filled in Washington because people don't want to work for the Trump administration, and he doesn't want anybody who's ever said a word of a negative nature about him. So he is so demanding of loyalty. He wants sycophants, and he's getting them, and they don't know anything about government or how it works, and it shows in the product, in the processes they're operating. So it's not he's got a huge albatross around him now with this special counsel. He has got to hire a very sophisticated lawyer out, because the White House counsel does not represent Donald Trump. They represent the office of the president. Now, he is the person who can speak for the office, but if he tells them to do something that is blatantly wrong, they have to ignore it. They cannot, you know, if they know that is not in the best interest of the presidency, this is post-Watergate. The rules of how lawyers represent entities has changed. And it's not the constituents of the entity, but the entity itself is the client. And the lawyer has to go to the level of protection to be the person who can represent that entity and make sure the entity is protected.
Well, so far, Don McCann, the White House counsel, has not equipped himself well, I don't think, even in his fundamental role of not just protecting the presidency itself, but also the current president. He seemed to have given Sally Yates the back of his hand.
We don't know that. All we know is the end result after he was forewarned about Flynn. We don't know if he did. We do know he reported it to the president. But we don't know what the president then said. Mm-hmm. He might have said, we're going to forget this. Just put that in your desk drawer and ignore it. So, you know, we can't assume, Ian, that it is the counsel who's misbehaving and saying, I'll take care of this, versus Trump, who I'm more inclined to believe would have said, let's try to avoid doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it also, both in the transition, I think McCann, in fact, Flynn had gone to him and told him that he had visited the Russian ambassador and taken money from the Turks, etc. That seems to be also a bit of a lapse. Again, it leads you back to asking what it is that Trump has over Flynn, or Flynn has over Trump.
The White House counsel, McCann, is going to have to answer some of these questions at some point, mm-hmm. because they do raise real issues, and they're connected with the overall impact of the Russian influence and other foreign influence, which appears, you know, it will be in the special counsel's purview. So how this all comes out, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is the White House counsel's office is a very powerful office under Trump. He's always used lawyers, and they have not cut back at all. McCann has hired about 25 really first-rate lawyers, lawyers who have left some of the best law firms in the country. They're clearly taking salary cuts to go there to work, and I just can't imagine the people he got to come over to the White House did it thinking they wanted to go to work in a hornet's nest. So this is going to be interesting how it plays out, because he's got talent, a lot of legal talent there, and they have to protect the presidency.
Well, just in closing, though, John Dean, what do you think of the idea that Joe Lieberman is likely to be the next FBI director?
I think that's just about the worst recommendation I could have envisioned. First, he's too old, and I have nothing against old people since I'm 3 years older than Joe. but the agents will recoil. It will hurt the department. It will hurt the agency and the bureau. So I just can't imagine it. There are so many able people to bring in. They're already reeling from the firing of Comey. You don't want to really make it worse by bringing in Lieberman, who has no federal law enforcement experience. He's not a former agent, not a former U.S. attorney. He just doesn't have any, you know, he was in the Senate, but that doesn't give him the skill set to really head our leading law enforcement investigative agency. So it's bad, and I don't think he's going to get a free ride in the Senate if they do that.
Well, just in closing, though, it would seem that there isn't anybody around that could make the kind of case that you made, which is a reasonable and rational one. Is that, at the end of the day, the problem?
That seems to be the problem. He won't listen to anybody.
Right.
He does all these gut instinct moves, and they're getting him in a lot of trouble.
Well, John Dean,
could end his presidency.
Well, on that note, a familiar one for you. I thank you for joining us, John Dean.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with John Dean, who is the former counsel to Richard Nixon, and prior to that was chief minority counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives and associate deputy attorney general of the United States. He is the best-selling author of such books as Blind Ambition and Worse Than Watergate and Conservatives Without Conscience, and is also a columnist at Justia.com and an analyst on CNN. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back looking into remarks by the number two Republican in the House, Kevin McCarthy, that, quote, "There are two people I think Putin pays, Rohrabacher and Trump."